cameras.
AA4GH on the W4NYK repeater. AA4GH on 30 Charlie.
Calculated it right, I think I had a gallon of fuel left. I drove it further than I normally do, but I made it. So now I got a full tank.
Was that the company truck or your own personal truck?
Personal truck. We keep the company trucks. The guys that run them at night, we fill them up at the end of every run. I don't do enough to really make a difference. I mean, I've run about 150 miles or so, but when you're running 300 miles, well, close to 400 miles every night, it gets down to about both tanks to about a half, and they always like to keep them topped off so they're ready to go for the next person.
So, yeah, I don't run mine that low on the vehicles, and I know you probably don't either, usually, and I heard a long time ago, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people correct me, that when the tank gets real low, it can get slopping around down there, and it starves the fuel pump, and that can cause a problem. I can't remember what it done, if it caused the fuel pump to run hot or what. But at any rate, there was some issue with that, so I just never have let it get that low. The only time I really got in the danger zone is when I was going to Washington, D.C. once, and it was nighttime. And I calculated that I could make it from point A to point B for fuel on I-70. And there wasn't no GPS or anything back then. And I think we were on fumes by the time we got to point B. I was getting nervous, and it was late at night.
Yeah, I usually fill it up about when it gets close to a quarter of tank. It's usually how my week goes. The Friday or so, you know, the last day of the week I'm in town, I top it off on the way home. I'm not sure what happened. I think I went longer, and I don't know exactly. I did make an extra trip into town Monday, so maybe that was part of it. But it was a lot lower. But it's fine. It made it. But I understand that. I can see how that might affect it if it gets low and is sloshing around. If you're hitting a lot of curves and bumps and things like that, it may not always get fuel, and it may start getting some air in there too.
Another hypothesis that's possible, I guess. there was some reason, it's just been many years ago, one of the nicest books I ever read was from Radio Shack, and they used to have a series of them. They were about an inch thick, and they were a soft cover, and it was on automotive technology. And boy, did it get into it, especially the electronics, like exhaust gas circulation systems and things like that. But I'm certain with these buses and all of that stuff now that that's long gone. There's still, you know, things like oxygen sensors and, oh, there was another sensor over there, EGR, that could cause you a problem and different things like that. And it talked to you about the stoichiometry, if I pronounced that right, the air gas ratio. I think it was 12.4 to 1 was what should have been. Things I'd never dreamed of because I'm not a good mechanic. But it was very interesting. Well, on another subject, have you talked to Bigfoot yet?
Is that okay? I did. I made one contact the other night. Seems like I don't have as much time on the working this schedule to be on the radio anymore. But, yeah, I made I think I got a W7I. I think that's what it was. That was the only one, but it was on CW. So the rest of them were on sideband, and I was just wanting to work a CW station.
This is N0TR with N4ZLK. Last night at 01:58, I talked to one on, and you know how much sideband I use. Hi. It was 01:58, so 9:58 on 14303 on sideband. Shame on me. But he was in Tacoma, Washington. It was Whiskey 7 Tango. That's the only one I made. You'd think that was a real important DX station, wouldn't you? I mean, man, there was a crowd up there.
Their website, and it's a pretty funny certificate and the QSL card. It'd almost be worth trying to get it and collect it. But, you know, I tried him. I have two antennas up. I've got what I would call a dipole. It's got some ladder line that feeds it. I think that's part of the antenna. And it resonates perfectly on 20 meters. Don't have to use a tuner. But I can work 10 through 40 on it. So usually when I work 20 meters, which is what this was on, I always just go to that antenna. And I tried, I called him and called him and called him, and he never did hear me. He'd always get somebody else. So I flipped over to my infed, which the receive signal for both of them were the same. There was no difference in the signal strength. He was coming in at 5.9 on both of them. But I flipped over to that infed and got him on the first call. So I thought that was interesting.
Still magic, James. It always has been to me. But, there's some funny things on there at times. I used to, when I was, many years ago, I'd send and get certificates from battleships and submarines and stuff like that. I still got them in a book over here. I see there's one on there quite a bit lately, 4 Victor 1 Savannah. And he was real easy. But he was in Haiti, Radio Club of Haiti, which is usually a hop, skip, and a jump for us here in South Carolina. But, man, that's a long call sign on CW, and they've been running a lot on CW. I just clicked on it. I don't know what he's running on now. But Haiti's not all that far. But that one I told you about last night's about, 5,000 miles out in the Pacific. It's a good one that Fox Ocean station, and then that Charlie 21, Mike is another one out there, Nehru Island. But I had a bad thing happen last night. I started to upload my log to N3FJP up to Logbook of the World, which I do every night, and it said call sign N0TR didn't exist. So I think it's my TQSL certificate is out of date. Because you got to redo those like every 3 years, I think it is. But I'm not smart enough to do it, so I always have a friend do it for me.
Surprised when it said you didn't exist. I'll have to check mine. I guess mine's probably about 2 years old. I better check the expiration date on it. Yeah, that logbook of the world, that was a kind of a complicated, I thought anyway, complicated for me system to set up. But I got it working. I have a logging program I use called Aether because I have a MacBook that I use, and I was trying to find something for Mac that I could log with, and there was about three options, and this was the middle option. One was a free option, and one was a little bit more expensive. And this is a great little program, and I just hit a button, and if I do EQSL, it'll do the same thing. And then I can, you know, on the QRZ log page, I can just, you know, click download and automatically download it from Logbook of the World. So I kind of keep those updated. Every time I make a couple of contacts or so, I'll go ahead and do that so that they come in, and I've got them on all three of those. I don't really check Logbook of the World that often, but I do upload it there.
Someone wants to jump in, they're certainly welcome. This is N0TR. Yeah, it's too complicated for me. I gotta make an IDF file or something, I don't know. Then I got a dear old friend that helps me do it. And I don't have to bother him with it, but every 3 years. DJW helped me with it, and Ariel helped me with it before, and I don't know who all, but it takes a little bit of computer skills to do it, Shane, so you're doing good. I just, that end of computing, I don't know anything about. People say, well, gosh, you used to work on CNC computers. Well, that's a different world. And now it's not getting to be, due to the computerization and all the new variable frequency drives and all of that stuff. But in my days, if you had a circuit board go bad, well, you fixed the circuit board. And then it got to where they got so complicated with microprocessors, you couldn't fix the circuit board. But when it comes to integrated circuits and stuff like that, resistors, capacitors, diodes, and all that, I could do it. But as far as data processing, I guess you'd call it, goes, I'm a cripple at that.
So follow the step-by-step directions. I read through them, and then I read through them again, and then I started doing it on the computer, and everything worked. I just couldn't. I just thought, when I got to the end of it, I thought, there's no way I could explain to somebody how to do this unless I did this multiple times over and over again. But everything works and has worked so far. You know, obviously they had that issue there for a while when they were down, but it came back up and it's still working like it should. So, and I like having, you know, I've got the personal log there on my computer, and then I like having it on QRZ as well. And then, you know, some people only do Logbook of the World, so it's kind of nice to get it where you can get confirmation there as well.
We don't have, what do you got, your light on your, is that a light on your, no, that's a light on the stairs. I seen Bernice coming down. I have proximity lights on the stairwell. And I thought she had her phone in her hand. That's my phone, isn't it? Why, did it ring? Got some reminders and stuff on the... What? All right. Well, I think she's grumpy tonight. She says she's cold, Shane. Sorry about that.
Hello, Miss Bernice. I would probably just slap him on the back of the head for that comment.
Did I say you could speak? Oh, that's a Spectrum Service alert. Update on Hurricane Helene progress. Boy, they really had their problems, but we was just out for 4 days and 5 hours. But I was amazed at the price of propane, though. I had the tank topped off, and it's $4 a gallon from Ferrell Propane Company. They're based in North Carolina, but they just are like 2.9 miles away from here. But gee, Manny, it was two something.
I walked in with the company I use, and I make a monthly payment, but I'm way ahead. So the last time they delivered, it didn't cost me. I mean, I'd already prepaid it. But they said, as long as you make that payment, we'll keep the price the same. It'll never go up. Well, that's what they originally told me. It did go up a little bit, but it's still below $3. So I'm good with that. I think it's $2.69 is what I'm paying for it.
We was out one other time for about a half a day, and then it runs 6 minutes once a week. And anyways, it was only down to about 42%. It's 325 gallons. So I had it filled, and that was 115 gallons, so add that up.
Yeah, that's like paying for the two or three people behind you at the fuel pump to get a full tank. Now, is the generator the only thing that propane tank runs on, runs?
That's all it runs. Are you on propane up there?
Got gas heat, a gas fireplace, which I rarely use, a gas water heater now, which I had installed a couple of years ago, and we just put a gas stove in, and boy, we were very thankful for that gas stove when the power was out.
There's nothing wrong with them. They don't use pilot lights anymore. They have igniters on them. But I used to work on the darn thing some in the old days. But everything, all the gas heaters and stuff I ever worked on, all the way up to 13 million BTU stress oven, they had pilot lights on them. Now, one of the stress ovens, it had a thing, and it was like a circle. And it had contacts out there on the inner circle, and they'd go round and round on the servo motor, and it put about 12,000 volts out there over to the igniters. I had one guy, that idiot, if it wasn't light, he'd walk in there and take a newspaper or something and light them. And I told the boss one day, I said, you know, Alan's going to blow that thing up. And he says, well, he had called me in there. And he says, you don't know what you're doing and can't fix that. I said, I've never been asked to fix it, John. And he was a superintendent. And he says, well, go fix it. And he was over at the foundry. It wasn't even my responsibility. And I went over there and fixed it. But I told him, even if I fix it, I said, occasionally the gap on those spark gaps will change a little bit. You got to adjust them. And I said, he's going to blow that up one of these days. And lo and behold, it was about 2 or 3 months later, and he blowed the whole building up, Shane.
Did he go with it, or what? How exactly did that happen?
Well, he was one of the biggest liars in the world, so you couldn't believe him. But no, he didn't get hurt, thankfully. But this guy, he was noted for that. God rest his soul, he died here a while back. The obituaries back up there in Kansas where we live. But he was real bad about that. But he did blow it up, and I mean to tell you, those guys that were in the machine shop or the structural shop over there, they liked to die because it blew bricks everywhere. They're as big as the 13 million BTU one that I had to keep going. And he tried doing the same thing on that until the vice president came over to me one day and he said, what's Parker doing in there messing around with those relays and stuff in that control panel? And I said, well, him and Bill seem to think they know what they're doing. And he says, do they? I said, no, sir. I said, that's going to wind up just like the one over at the foundry. And he went over to my boss, and my boss went back and told him, don't ever touch that again. He said, you call Rouse. That was dangerous. I mean, some of them in diameter, and that's a lot of gas. They'd back a freight car in there with a kiln or something on it, you know, and had a 20-foot door on it. You didn't want that to go out. Well, I told the vice president, or the president of our company, I said, you won't need no school bond issue, because I said Pittsburgh High School will be gone if that thing blows up.
I guess there's a reason that they have regulations about who can work on things and who should be around certain things, because not everybody is fit for it. Some people, you just can't tell them, you know, they're going to do their own thing anyway.
You see me, I had a special relay that I could bypass an infrared sensor on for troubleshooting, and he'd just stick it in there and leave it. So if the pilot went out, the gas would still flow, and each one of them burners was 1 million BTUs. That's a lot of gas. And then the other burners would still be going, and when the room got saturated with the gas, it would explode. And like I said, there wouldn't been any high school left over there. But he didn't bother it anymore after that. My boss didn't want to tell him, and Tim McNally was his dad, owned the company. He says, you tell him, Gary. And he never messed with it anymore. But it was a pain in the neck. It gave me a lot of trouble. But I had about 100 heaters to take care of. Some of them were gas, forced air, 225,000 each. And then I had 480 volt. I'll light that up in a minute, Bernice. I'll get that going. Infrared heaters. And then I had gas infrared heaters. And so I worked on a lot of heaters and a boiler. But you got to have a lot of respect for gas-operated equipment. It'll bite you. There's no doubt about it.
Imagine. I have not messed with gas. I did. We had a stove installed, and I watched them do it, and I read the directions, and then that stove ended up having issues, so they replaced it, but they brought it out, and I was looking at it, and I was like, you know what? I looked at a couple of YouTube videos, and I read some stuff online, and everything was already installed. The gas lines were run. All I had to do was just turn it off and put new attachments on, and you know, took off the old one, put the new one in there, and it's worked great ever since. So I at least know how to do that now. I still have not tapped into or, you know, tried to figure out all the pressures, and I don't understand all that yet. I don't know if I really want to or want to mess with that. I'll let somebody who's been to school do that. I can swap out an appliance, but I'm not going to mess with the lines and the pressure regulators and all that.
As I remember, it was about 4 ounces on normal household equipment, Shane. The stress oven, the 13 million BTU, had 5 pounds per square inch on it. Does that give you an idea?
Because I changed out the little burner ports, I guess you call them, because it came with natural gas, and swapped it out for the LPG. And, you know, they were like, one of them, the little simmer burner was, I don't know, 29 BTU or something like that. I mean, and then the biggest one was 82 or 89 BTU for the big boiler burner.
Water, that's a given. Well, I ran a propane generating station, and it had a 30,000-gallon tank on it. And back in the 80s, when there was a gas shortage, I don't know if it was down here or not, but up there it was, when it got real cold up there in Kansas, They would cut off our gas completely if you used over a certain amount. Well, they'd call the company, and I'd have to go out and fire that propane generating setup. And a 30,000-gallon tank, it was like a half a block long, Shane, and had ladders going up to the top of it. And then they had three propane generators. And if you took the steel off the outside, the covers, it looked like two scuba tanks in each one of them. And they were 70 gallons of propane per hour, so I could generate 210 gallons per hour. And there's like 4 or 6 inch pipe feeding over to the plant. And it was about a half a block away from the plant. And I would mix an air gas ratio through this Maxon valve, and it was equivalent to propane. So I'd add air to it, like a carburetor. It was a carburetor. I'd add air to it in order to make it the same consistency as natural gas. That way I didn't have to go in and change out the orifices on about 100 heaters each time. But they weren't big enough to power the whole plant. So I had to juggle the system a little in order to still squeeze out some natural gas, but I didn't want to use too much or they'd shut us off. It was fun, but they weren't 100% pilots, and sometimes when you went over there to light them, they didn't have thermocouples on them, and when you go over there to light them, there's a different setup on them, and the gas, propane will go down. And you'd reach in there with a lighter to light it, and it'd blow you back off of your feet and wake you up. And the superintendent followed me over there one day, and that happened, and he never did follow me over there again. All I seen was tracks in the snow, and the guys in the foundry told me he was watching you.
And 4ZLK. That's a funny story. And orifices, yeah, orifice, that's the word I couldn't remember. But anyway, yeah, it can be dangerous if you're not careful. And I guess, were they putting that sulfur smell in the gas back when you were working with it, too? I don't know how long they've been doing that.
I'm sorry, Bernice said something. Say again, Jake.
Well, who's more important, who you're listening to. As it should be. Did they put the sulfur smell, whatever they put in there that gives the smell so that you can smell if it's leaking? Was it in there back when you were working with it?
Yeah, I forget what they call that stuff. You know how that started was down in Texas years ago. They had so much gas they had to just burn it off at the oil producing, at the oil wells. And so they give it to the school system near that site free. I saw this on TV some time ago. And it did not have the smell of gas in it. And one day it leaked into that school and it blew up and killed 300 students. And so they passed a law, I think Congress, that everyone was required to put that smell in there from then on, Shane.
I've not heard that story. I knew there was a reason. I knew they did it for some reason. I didn't realize that something had happened like that. Tom, I'm going to have to go. I'm not far from home, but my wife was calling me, and I didn't answer, so I better call her back. I was listening to the rest of that story. I'll talk to you later. You and Bernice have a good evening. I enjoyed it tonight. N0TR and 4ZLK.
Yeah, me too, Shane. I really did. Pleasure's all mine, sir, and I'll get over and get something on TV or Bernice will slap me around. N4ZLK, N0TR73. Good night, Shane.